Good night, everybody. I figure let's try to record a little bit while I'm there to Israel, and if people find that it's useful, so fine, and if not, then also fine. But I wanted to just leave, you know, Klayim with a few of the end shiurim, rather than just leave it blank. Anyway, so I'm going to start from 76b2. Rav Hilber of Volos Hayla Beg Shleshim Ribu Dinar. He had a fine garment, 300,000 dinars. The other Rebbe gave it to Rebbe. What's the claim? Rebbe found that there was claim in the beggar that he was given as a gift. So Sarafa, he burnt it. That is pretty clear. It says in footnote 13 that he could have removed the offending thread. He was concerned there might be other such threads hidden in the garment, so he acted stringently. Anyway, he had no choice other than to destroy it, it says. Okay. Rav Mana had also 300,000 dinar beged, Yavu the Rebbe, the Rebbe Chia Bar Ada, rather. Gave it to Rebbe Chia Bar Ada. He found climate, a Malay, so he sent Rav Mana, Zamt, Lemis. You want me a garment that's fit for a dead person? Because a dead person is chashuv min ha-mitzvah, so you could put on a beged of klayim. Let's see, I think there's other perush from here. 14. And whatever it says. Have a layout to have a machra. So it says it remained with Reb Chia Abba for safekeeping until he died, and then he was wrapped in it as a shroud. So he ended up using it, taka, as a something for mace. He didn't want to sell it to a goy because the claim was not clearly identifiable. So he kept it in a safe place until he died, and then he used it as a shroud. Okay, that's what it says over here. Amar Pagai, Reb Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, have a mefaked goy beisei. So he would instruct the household, Lamukma Nevel the Amar Mikami Nevel the Chiton. Not to place the loom for spinning wool next to the loom for spinning linen, begin pipa, because the threads might become attached to be woven. Okay, so it's like kind of like keeping it far away. I just would like to add one little thing here that, you know, a lot of times people have hot water kettles on top of their stove and the boiling water. Meanwhile, they have a frying pan in the adjacent fire, and it's shooting out oil, and the oil is landing on the hot water pot. So that can be a problem if you're frying some liver one day, next day you're frying or making a fried egg. You know, these things could lead to shilas. I think it's a similar kind of thing here. You want to keep things far away from each other so there aren't shilas. Next, Hashurim HaKalach. Hashurim Tak, so Hashurim refers to silk. Kalach Agvin Ikisari. It's Agvin of Caesarea. It's something that's similar to wool. 20. It's a type of coarse silk that resembles wool. So, Amar Abshem Megamlio, Kizati Alkoma Farshri Hayam, Amu Kalcha Shema. That he inquired all the seafarers what klach is. They said it's kalcha. And 21, it says it's a soft, woolly substance, grows on the rocks of the Dead Sea, whatever the pshat is. So this is a problem of, let's see, I forgot to look up the Mishnah. What did it say about this? Let's go back and see what the Mishnah said about this case. It says, Hashirai Mahakelach. This is on Ayin Hayim Beis. It says, Abraham Mishum Klaim. In other words, since it looks like klayim, so we don't do it. Rav Amar, this is the famous rule of Rav, that you can never do something even in private. So the Gemara is going to ask like 5-6 questions on Rav. So he has several questions. Now we're on Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. Masisa Pligal Rav. So here's the first mention. Here's the brisa. Pishon should sova b'cheres. If you have linen that was colored with black dye, lo yasem imena imra mifur sama. Shouldn't make it a conspicuous border for a linen garment because it looks like klayim. Even though it's all linen, but because it's black, so it looks like you have some wool on there. I believe that's the pshat, right? The border must be strong and thick. A linen border can be mistaken for wool. That's just in footnote 3. And the other thing to remember is linen is commonly not dyed. It's usually just white. So this, to the black linen gives an impression of shatness. So that's a problem of Marasayit. Now, it says, shouldn't make a conspicuous border. Will become because it's size mutter, but on mats and cushions it's permitted because obviously it's not conspicuous, but it's a cushion. Then it's not a problem because it's not so conspicuous. So this seems to be against Rav, right? Next case is Masi simply on Rav, the sponsor of Moisef Ne'avad Zora. So if you drop some coins in front of a Vadizor, shouldn't be bend down and collect them, because it looks like you're bowing down to the Vadizor. If it's a private place, mutter, then it's permitted. So again, it contradicts Rav. I see some legal Rav, here's another one. If you have these idols that have human faces that have water coming out of their mouths, so it's like a fountain, like a water fountain in the cities. So lohe nice and piv al piv. You shouldn't take, you know, water from that. Shalohe kiminashe klev adazor. Looks like you're kissing the idol. Vayimakam tzanua is mutter. So again, this is a even though it's asur b'fahesya, but vayimakam chadre kadarim, it's mutter. Again, a question on Rav. Fourth question, masin simply gal Rav. Ein shecht meguma, you can't shecht an animal over a pit so that the blood will fall into the pit. This is a practice of Aida Vadazara. You could do it in house so that the blood should flow into it. In the street you shouldn't do it. Shouldn't lend support to the practice of the heretics. So slaughtering your pit is forbidden in the street, but in the house it is permitted. Again, a question on Rav. Here's a fifth question. Rav, so your clothing became soaked on Shabbos. So you're wearing them on the road home, and you get to the outermost courtyard of the city. And so you want to take off your clothes as soon as possible because you're probably cold and also it's very uncomfortable. Shait kan b'chama, and then you put them out in the sun to dry. Avaloi kineged on, but not in front of people. You should do it kind of like in a backyard, so to speak. So again, this whole thing is a contradiction to Rav, who says there's no difference between in front of people and privately. And then we have this final contradiction. Masi simply gal Rav. Here's the final one. You have a drainage channel running from a private domain into a public domain. So these are types of drains that come off the roof of the house, and then they go from there into the courtyard, and from there into the Shusha Rabbim. So it says that if you have a drainage channel from Rishos Yachter Shus Rabin that's covered for the first four Amis in the public domain, say ain't shopping with Sachamayim B'Shabbos, you can't pour water into it because people are going to say, right, Tani Allah, okay, he doesn't say it here in the English at the top, let's see, 26 he says, if a person spills water on the floor of a channel and it trickles out into the Shusha Rabbim, you've not violated the Issa D'Oraisa of Hoytzah. But if you fling the water on the ground towards the Shusha Rabbim or pour it out very close to the exit so that it flows right by, it's his force, it's like a Koyach Rishon, then he actually has violated an Issa D'Oraisa. That's at the end of 26. Now, okay, and the 26 at the beginning, he says that the reason why we're talking about whether it's covered or not covered is because once it's covered, it becomes a makom tor. So I guess that's important. So you're going to pour it in the Rishus HaYachid. It's going to hit the Rishus HaRabim. It's going to be under this makom tor. And then after that, after it becomes uncovered again, it again becomes a Rishus HaRabim. Let's see what it says here. That the homeowner pours wastewater into the channel in his property, and it flows out and is absorbed in the section beneath the Rishus HaRabim, he doesn't commit the Malacha Vaitzah. Should the water flow all the way out, all the way to the uncovered part of the channel in the public domain, it's been transferred from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, depending on the manner in which it was poured, this can constitute a biblical violation. That's how hard you push it. Okay. Oh, I wasn't sure about this. I thought that if you go from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim through a makom tor, that was not going to be a problem. I don't remember. Okay, let's keep going. So it says 27, Ein Shefen L'Shechem Mayim B'Shabbos. You can't pour water into it on the Shabbos. He says that this is actually a machloikis in the Mishnah over there. The Chachamim hold what it says here in our Gemara. But Blos Ben Yaakov says no, that if it's 4 amos long, you can pour the wastewater into it. He holds the water needs to travel this distance. We need not be concerned at rushing out, because it's more than likely to be absorbed into the ground. Chachamim are worried about, even if it's 100 amos long, it doesn't make a difference. It's forbidden to pour water directly into the channel. Okay, so now we see why there's the mention of this dalet amos. Basically, the only reason why dalet amos is mentioned is because of we're responding to the sheet of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. He's trying to figure that out. Why do we mention dalet amos? The answer is because Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds that if there's dalet amos, then it's mutter to pour the water, because at that point, it will probably be absorbed. But the Chacham don't agree with him. They hold even if it's 100 amos, it's also awesome. Okay. So our Gemara is only quoting the Chachamim's Shita. So what is Tani Allah? It says in the Braisa, if it was a gutter, and he has pictures over here, there's a gutter and a downspout. So the gutter is the bottom right picture, the downspout is the bottom left picture. So it says if there's a down, if there's a gutter, it's mutter. Oineska shaman mutter, and during the rainy season, even if it's a drain pipe, it's also mutter. Why is the drain pipe more problematic than the gutter? I think it's because it's like it's like twice removed. Yeah, water 31. Water falling from a roof level gutter into the channel does not rush to the street. Considering that any unabsorbed water flows out to the street gently, no one will think he deliberately poured it out. But if it's a drain pipe and a downspout, so then it could come out with a rush. Okay, so it's going to come out because of the pressure of the water. So it may have the appearance of a wrongdoing. All right, so we have a svara of Maris Ayin for the downspout. Okay. Tani Makaparim, Hai Makam Sanua Mutter. So Makapar said, if it's a private place, the drain pipe is permitted at all times, even in the rainy season. Even the non-rainy season. So again, you have a problem on Rav. Elaine pleading on Rav, the Gemara says they all argue on Rav, less Lukiyam, and there's no way to reconcile them. So this is a big shiloh over here. About, so what do you do? Here the Gemara is mashma, that maybe we don't pass it like Rav, right? Because it says you have all these mishnayos that are difficult on Rav. So let's see what it says here in 35. He says that the Yerushalmi supports the view of Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon that the halacha is not like Rav. And you're actually allowed to do things which are asos marasayin b'chadri chadarim. Others say less lukim doesn't mean that there's no way to reconcile it. Less lukim means something else. It means they have no foundation. These mishnayos and brises are not halachically valid. In other words, all the questions we're bringing are not good questions. So then it would be that would support the Rif and the Rosh that hold the what? That the Rav is the halacha. Okay, Bavli challenges Rav from the Mishnah that teaches one whose clothes become soaked on Shabbos is permitted to spread them out to dry in private but not in public. Bavli responds by citing a brisa containing an opposing Tanaic view. The one is forbidden to spread them out to dry even in a secluded area. So while there are Tanas that say Rav, that contradict Rav, but there are also Tanoim that support Rav. So Rav has different Tanoim. Bavli basically says that there are different Tanoim that support Rav, different Tanoim that argue on Rav, and therefore you can't really ask Kashas. Okay. As far as I know, we do Paschal like Rav. Now, when it comes to mats and cushions, it's permitted to rest upon them, provided your skin doesn't touch them. That's if it's a empty mat or cushion. If it's filled, then it's aser. Even if your skin does not touch it. 37, he says if it's filled with feathers or stuffing, then what happens is he's going to sit on the cushion. It's going to pop up because of it. It'll give. It's soft, and so once it gives, so the sides of the cushions will come up and cover the sides of your leg. When it covers the side of your leg, then it's a problem of not lo silbash but of lo yalo alecha. Remember, there's two isurim here. We're talking about either lo silbash shatnes or I can't come up on you. So the sides coming up sideways is considered coming up. Let's see. The authorities cite this Gemara in the context of whether it is permitted to sit on the seat of a coach that contains shatnez. Shuas Panama Iris writes that this is permitted even though the seats are filled with stuffing because they are so tightly packed one does not sink into them. There's no concern for their coming up into his body. So that's basically the bottom line here, is you don't have to worry about cushions with shatnez because they don't come up. All right. Now we're on Ein Zayin on Beis. B'nosin al gabe mitzvah tava. That's where the cushion is placed on a hard bench. B'nosin al gabe mitzvah afilo reikon aser. But if it's put on a bed, then it would be aser even if it was an empty cushion, because of the same reason, because when you sit on the bed, it's going to cave in a little bit, and that'll cause the cushion to come up and land, and you'll be over again on Shatnas. Hari Shailabach, Meshukhanus of Lovesh Klaim, someone was walking in the street and they found Klaim on him. Shrein Amaroyim, there's two Amaroyim that have Amachalikas about this. Chana Marasar, one says it's forbidden for him to continue wearing the baguette, and he has to take it off in the street. Haramamutra, one says it's allowed. He continue on till his house. Mandam Asr Dvar Torah. The one who says it's Asr to continue walking is because he holds his innocent deraisa. Anytime you have an innocent deraisa, you have to take it off. Mandam Mutra Kehidam Rab Zera. Shall this what to this, like what Reb Zera said, Gadol Kala Habriyas, Shehudaycha es mitzvah b'loisa se sha'achas. He holds that there's Kavod HaRabim is going to be Daicha the Isser. Now, it can't be that it's an Isser D'oraisa, because the Isser D'oraisa, the Gemara says, Beferish in Brachas, Yutessam and Beis, and Chokhma Vein Tun Vein, Eitzel Neged Hashem. You cannot, there's no such thing as an Eitzel, and if you go ahead and if you have an issa d'oraisa you're faced with, you need to take it off, even in the street. So the Gemara must not be talking about an issa d'oraisa. The Gemara is talking about shatnas d'rabbanan. So by d'rabbanan, then there's makom to be mekel. Gadol kavod harabim shehudaycha es hamitzvah. As hamitzvah b'loisa say sha'achas. So loisa say would be not shatnas, but it would be loisosar, I think. Seven, let's see. Yeah, he says, numbers, footnote seven, on the bottom of 77b1, it says, it does not mean that human dignity can override every biblical commandment, because these are only allowing rabbinically prohibited kalayim on account of human dignity. Means that human dignity overrides specifically the negative commandment of Leisosar. And in the brackets, he explains that it doesn't mean they're actually overriding the Isser, but it means that the rabbi suspended the decrees temporarily if it would compromise human dignity. So he brings from the who says this? In the Mara Folda, I guess. Rashi. These are actually, it's a quote from Rashi and Brachas. That they suspended their decree temporarily. So the biblical commandment to obey the sages' decrees does not apply when it's temporarily going to conflict with human dignity. Now, the Yushalmi, the main thing we have to look at is these two words the Yushalmi uses, which is Sha'achas. So that means human dignity overrides a rabbinic prohibition for a short time. So he's going to remove the client garment as soon as he reaches a private area. But to have a continuous violation of any prohibition, that would be usur. So if you have a single garment in good condition and it's client, he may not wear it even though all his other clothing is in tatters and he cannot afford a new garment. You're stuck with it. Tani. That is to say, if you find you're giving a shear, let's say, or you have somebody sitting in the basement who's a Kohen, and someone, Rachmana Litzlan, dies in the basement, or somebody brings in a dead body and puts it in the basement, so now we have Tumas Oihel, Tumas Mace in the Oihel, which the Kohen's Muzer, not the Matam himself. So it says here, we're not medacting it. In other words, we don't even Vatal Torah. We'll let him remain in his state of tumah, so to speak, until he finishes learning. So that would be in medakta him, the mace. And the second case would be below b'klayim, that if the person is a tumah chacham and he's sitting and learning, and you realize that he has some shatnas on his begotim, right? You went ahead and bought, let's say, a suit at the same suit sale as he did, and found out that all those suits were shatnas. So you're not supposed to be medactic. You're not supposed to tell him anything. Just let him finish learning. When he gets out of the basement, then you'll tell him the good news. So that's what it says. In other words, Bittul Torah is more important. It overrides the Isurei Drabanan, I guess, in this case. So here we have a story. Abiyasi is sitting and he's teaching in the basement. Havataman miso. Then there was a corpse. If any Kohen left, he didn't say anything. And someone who stayed behind, also he didn't say anything. So he allowed the Kohanim to stay there regardless. Okay. Another case. Rabbi Imi have a Yosef Masi. Rabbi Imi was sitting and teaching. Amar chad lachare at lavush klayim. So one guy told his friend, "You're wearing klayim." Amalei Rabbi Imi. So Rabbi Imi said to the first one, he was upset at him because he didn't feel it was necessary to tell the other guy. So why'd you tell him? So he got upset at him and he told that guy who brought it to the person who was being over his attention. He said, "Shlach monech v'yahavai." Take off your garment and give it to him, so he doesn't have to be embarrassed. Okay. Let's go weiter. Tony, in Arai B'Klaim based on Mikdash, there's no casual wearing of Klaim in the base of Mikdash. It means that the Kohanim, or the Kohen Gadol, who was wearing Shatnas, would only be allowed to wear it while he was doing Avodah. But to wear it temporarily to go out of the Beis HaMikdash, let's say, to go, suppose he forgot something in his car and he needed to run outside with his car keys to get something from his car, so he could not wear the Shatnas for even a temporary purpose. That's the Ein Arai B'Klaim Beis HaMikdash. Any notes here? There's a 12. Note 12. He goes through, you know, which beged of the Kohanim was actually Shatnas. I'm not going to go through that whole thing. Ayin Shom, note 12, 77b3. And you'll see. We're only talking about the belt. Let's put it this way. The belt of the Kohen Gadol. Or to machlokas, whether the belt of a kohen hegit. So that's the bottom line. Vahatani kohen shiyotzel adabarim chaveiro mivligo ton tefila imosho ton kineshadayim v'raglayim. That if he went outside the base of Mikdash because his fellow friend Kohen come in, let's say he hadn't seen him in a long time, and they wanted to talk, so imhifligo, if he was talking to him for a while, then he has to go back and be toivel again. If it's just for a short period of time, then he has to have kishudayim v'raglayim. Now, so the question is a very simple question. The question is, how could you say there's no Arai B'Klaim B'Beis HaMikdash and he can't wear it outside the Beis HaMikdash? If he had to take off his clothes to go outside to speak to his friend, and then when he puts back on his clothes, he's going to definitely need to have tefillah again. So, since it says Im L'Shah Ton Kishadayim Raglayim, it's obvious that he's still wearing the Begodim. It was just a short period of time. So you see there is Arai, that's the Kash of the Gemara. Where it says, come big day Zov, come a big day Lov, and it depends whether they're talking about the Kohen Gadol's golden begotten, or the big day Lovon, which he wore before he went into the Kodesh Kadosh on Yom Kippur. Since they contain only linen, you could wear them when he's not performing a temple service, even outside the temple courtyard. Okay, so that's what we're saying. Yeah. Now we're on Ayin Ches. Lo yala alecha, mutu la'atziya tachtecha. You don't have it on you, but you could put it underneath you. Avon rachachamim, lo yasekhen shalitein yuma achas o'ela al-basari. You shouldn't put a shatnez garment underneath you because you might end up pulling up one of the threads onto your baguette. Okay, so we'll stop this recording here and save it as 77.